bicycle.
I want to ride my
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Motorists in Ohio now have to give at least a 3-foot leeway when passing a cyclist on a public roadway. Ohio is the 29th state to adopt the law that proponents hope will reduce crashes and save lives. That's because when an automobile collides with a bicycle, there isn't much of a contest, right? We're talking about cycling and bicycle safety this hour. Joining us, Cincinnati-based attorney specializing in bicycle law, Steve Magus. Welcome back.
Well, thank you, Ann. Very happy to be back.
And executive director of Yay Bikes, a local bike advocacy and education group, Catherine Gervis. Welcome back, Catherine.
Thank you, Ann. We love being here.
The previous law in Ohio required motorists to pass at a safe distance. What's the benefit of being more explicit? Let's talk to the legal beagle here.
Well, you know, I was initially not real supportive of the what they call X-foot laws because they're 3-foot in many states. Some states have 4. Some have, I think there's one that has 5. I think it's a meter overseas. Because my thought was, well, how do you enforce that? And I started researching the history of the current passing law, which, as you said, you have to pass at a, quote, safe distance. And there's no case that I ever found where a bicyclist got any benefit out of that. So the thought on the 3-foot law to me that changed my mind was it's infinitely more enforceable than the safe distance law. A police officer can look, see an aggressive pass, see a car mirror almost hit a cyclist's elbow and say, clearly, you know, that was within 3 feet. If I can reach out and signal a turn and my hand gets whacked by a passing car, that's within 3 feet. So I thought from an enforceability perspective, it would be much better than the old law. And then from a sort of teaching tool that we use on the in cycling advocacy, it as it's done, it generates a buzz within the sort of driving community. It has to be taught now in the driver's ed classes. It's a law that kids who want to learn how to drive, they have to learn the driving laws, and this will be one of them. So if it's never enforced, at least it'll be in their head somewhere that, oh, we should pass, give some distance.
Does that mean it'll be a question on the test too?
Could be. One of the things we're looking at the Ohio Bicycle Federation is to communicate with people that teach drivers, and we've been doing that for years. The problem is a lot of those places are commercial and interests, and they have proprietary materials, and they don't want to show us how they teach necessarily. Mm-hmm. But we certainly would encourage them to teach the fact that you have to give space to cyclists when you pass them.
The Ohio Department of Health has gotten really interested in active transportation also and is working with the folks who write the test, the driver's license test, to see if in collaboration with the Ohio Bicycle Federation, to see if additional questions related to motorists and bicyclists being peacefully on the road together can be added to that test. So we're seeing, you know, health professionals say making sure people on bikes are safe on roads is good for the health of citizens of Ohio.
Because it means that they'll be on the bikes more. I mean, is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
That it's good, biking is healthy, but a lot of people don't do it or don't do it on the roads because they're scared.
That's exactly right. At Yay Bikes, we find overwhelmingly that first of all, there's national data, and we've replicated it with research we did in downtown Columbus's businesses in downtown Columbus. Over 60% of the population is interested in replacing a trip they currently make by car with a bike trip. Now, that might not be a trip to work. It could be a trip to coffee, a trip to worship. But people are interested in using their bikes for transportation. Overwhelmingly, the reason they don't is because they're nervous about what's going to happen with bikes and cars on the road. And so things that help clarify what the relationship between cyclists and motorists on the road is help increase safety and help increase people's confidence about getting out there and using their bike for transportation.
We're talking about bike safety and the legal aspect of that and the everyday aspect of it with my two guests, Steve Magus. He's Cincinnati-based attorney specializing in bicycle law. Also, Catherine Gervis, executive director for Yay Bikes, a local bike advocacy and education group. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about right now the new law that requires motorists give 3 feet leeway or greater when they're passing a bicyclist. I read that Bike Cleveland purchased a device that monitors the distance of passing cars. It's called a C3FT, whatever that means. What does it do, and can anyone get one? I mean, what do you think about that, Steve?
I'm not familiar with all of these devices. There's a few things out there. I know that a police officer, it's like a laser-guided thing that they can actually point and get a reading on what the passing distance is. I mean, they're interesting. Part of our pitch to the state in terms of trying to get this passed was you don't have to have a, you don't have to outfit your police department with fancy equipment in order to do this. An officer can visually observe an encounter between a car and a bike.
You can eyeball a yard.
Yeah. And there's a Supreme Court case in Ohio that says an officer can eyeball a car and speeding and issue a speeding ticket based solely on what is seen by the eye. So it's not a stretch to say that that would be the case. Now, you know, we're not pushing for mass enforcement, but there is a way to do it without buying a fancy tool.
Not mass enforcement, then mass awareness?
Absolutely, mass awareness.
Yeah. I'm curious about one thing, whether or not the helmet-mounted video cameras have been a benefit in all of this process. I mean, it's evidence for sure, right, Steve?
Oh, it's been a huge benefit in many ways. Cyclists frequently, anyone who rides on the roads regularly encounters aggressive motorists. The 3 foot law, you know, deals with more the careless passing as well as the aggressive passing. You know, the aggressive passing is done by people who are intentionally trying to instill fear in the cyclist. And we've had anecdotal stories of these going on forever. And if there's, you know, in the past before the 3 foot law, you know, you'd report something like that to a police officer and, well, did he hit you? No. Okay, then what are you whining about? No, no blood, no foul was sort of the approach. Now, these helmet cams, front and rear mounted cameras have been used as evidence in felony cases, of road rage cases. I have a case pending now in here that involves not a helmet camera, but a telephone was recording video of an aggressive encounter. So there's any visual evidence is wonderful in the courtroom.
Is it something that Yay Bikes endorses?
So one of the things that we found, and we do a lot of education of cyclists, which most people who are riding bikes are also people who are driving cars. And one of the things that we've found is when cyclists maintain a lane position that is visible and predictable, things just run smoother. Lots of times, those of us who are out riding bikes on roads feel like maybe we should be all the way to the right, hugging the curb.
It's kind of the way a lot of us grew up, think we're taught to do it.
But what happens when you hug the curb is you encounter a parked car, so you have to pull away and then you go back to the curb. And then you encounter broken glass, so you pull away and you go back. And then you encounter a pothole, so you pull away and then you go back. At the speed of bike, that all makes sense. At the speed of car, that person on a bike looks like a crazy person. They look like an unpredictable road user weaving all over the road. The motorist doesn't see all of the things that cyclist is dodging. What we know about the way roads are designed and how they worked is most of the hazards that a cyclist is going to encounter are up against the right edge of the curb. So if a cyclist comes out and travels where the passenger tire rolls or in the center of the lane, it actually creates more peace on the roads. When you're in a conversation with a motorist, they are sure that that's going to be a cyclist in the way. But when you watch the behavior of motorists, when a cyclist is traveling in a position where they're visible and they're predictable road users, what you find, in fact, is that motorists will roll around that cyclist like water rolls around a rock in a river. Overwhelmingly, people are rational. They do not want to hit cyclists on the road. As motorists, we're trained to stay in those yellow lines. And if it feels like I can stay in between the lines and pass the cyclist, then that's what I'll do as a motorist, and that often leads to close passes. If a cyclist will position themselves where the passenger tire rolls, a motorist actually has to think when they pass, and that's what you want them to do. You want their mind engaged. Even the biggest jerk in the world does not want to have body work done to their car, and that's what's going to happen if they hit a cyclist. They will move around you. And so a huge part of what we do is train people to ride in a position where you're visible and predictable, and it just creates more peaceful streets for everyone.
I was going to say that right-hand lane position sends a visual cue to the motorist that says, I can probably squeeze my car between that bike and that lane line. Once they pass by going over the lane line, you generally see them give enough room. If they think they can squeeze the car between you and the lane line, they'll try to keep it in there.
But one issue that people should understand is that they can cross the lane line.
Absolutely.
Even if it's a double yellow, as long as oncoming traffic doesn't block their way.
Right.
It's legal to do that.
It is. That was changed in 2006.
I got a question here from Rick in Columbus. You're on the air. Hi, Rick.
I'm just curious about the effect of the 3-foot rule on country roads with a lot of no passing areas, two-lane roads that you might not be able to give that three foot without going into the other lane.
Okay.
What do you do? Just drive along behind them?
Well, I was going to say we have the lane law was changed in 2006 to allow you to pass a slower moving vehicle, whether it's a cyclist, an Amish buggy, a piece of farm equipment. You're allowed to go over the double yellow as long as the reasonable types of safety issues.
The oncoming traffic. Then.
Yeah, there's no oncoming traffic, and the speed is slow enough that it's half the posted speed, which usually isn't a problem on a 45, 55-mile-an-hour country road.
So you can already, Rick, you can already cross the double line, assuming, you know, there's no oncoming traffic. So thanks a lot for that call, though. It's good clarification. Yeah.
As long as there's no oncoming traffic, you've got clear visibility. And we find, in fact, that's what motorists do. They will cross the double yellow line to pass safely. If there's not clear visibility, overwhelmingly, we find that people wait until there is, and then they pass.
Okay. We are going to continue our conversation. Spring has sprung, you know, the first day of spring. It usually get together with these folks at least once a year because there's always something to talk about when it comes to bicycling in Ohio. My guest, Catherine Gervis, she's executive director for Yay Bikes. That's a local bike advocacy and education group. Also, Steve Magus, he's a Cincinnati-based attorney specializing in bicycle law. If you have questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or check out the Facebook page and post your question or comment there. It's All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Just get on that bicycle and ride. Yeah, get on that bicycle and ride. Neath the sunny skies or along the ocean side, just ride, ride, ride.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about cycling and bicycle safety this hour. Still with us, Cincinnati-based attorney specializing in bicycle law, Steve Magus. Also, executive director for Yay Bikes, a local bike advocacy and education group, Catherine Gervis, are both with me. If you have a question or comment, and lots of you do, good. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's continue our conversation about the new law. Ohio's created a new law. You need to give 3 feet leeway when you pass a bicyclist in a motor vehicle. We've got a couple questions regarding that. But before we get to them, I want to ask about the berm. If you do ride in the berm, if you choose to ride in the berm, even though you know about the 3-foot law, you're just one of those people that just feels better safe than sorry. What do we know about that, Steve Magus?
The berm is sort of a question zone. The case law in Ohio is not clear as to what the quote roadway is. Some people think it's from white line to white line. So when you go to the right of the white line or to the right of that fog line, then that's the berm. And you don't have the right of way as a vehicle operator on a bicycle on the berm that you would have 6 inches to the left if you're on the roadway. Mm-hmm. So when you're on the roadway, it's clear the right-of-way that you possess as a cyclist is exactly the same right-of-way that any other vehicle operator has, and that's the right to go forward without interruption from anybody else. So if somebody violates your right-of-way, they're responsible. When you move over to the berm, there's some question about whether you still have that right-of-way. And let's say if a judge rules that you don't have that right-of-way and some accident happens, now instead of the other fellow immediately being at fault, it's like, well, you have to look at the circumstances and, you know, should you have slowed down before the guy backed out of the driveway? Or, you know, it becomes more of a dicier question as to what the legal rules are. And now there's some court cases that say anything that is paved is part of the roadway. And so presumably then,
if the berm happens to be paved.
Yeah, then there's at least a court of appeals decision that says that. But it's up in the air, and it's an open question. So we tend to discourage riding on the berm for many reasons. One of which is that it makes you harder to see from traffic, yeah, and you're not as predictable, and all those kind of things. But that, from a legal side, it can be problematic.
So we actually teach cyclists not to ride on the berm, or if they're riding on the berm, to treat it like they would riding on the sidewalk. You really need to yield at every intersection, which means every driveway. And it turns out if I'm using my bike for transportation and I'm trying to get to work, I'm probably going to be late if I have to yield at every driveway, just like every other vehicle on the road. People on bikes are just trying to get from A to B. And so being in a position where you're visible and predictable is where you're safer and where your rights as a road user are just clearer.
Joan in Delaware, you're on the air. Hi, Joan.
Hi. I have a question back on the lane. Thanks for the clarification of the law that you can cross those double lines and stuff. But just to get a visual, if a bike is in a bike lane and your car, can you assume that the 3 feet rule is in effect because they're in the lane and you're just going to stay in your lane?
And you could just stay in your lane, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, most bike lanes are wide enough, and when you think about 3 feet, if that cyclist, I think is if you pass close enough that a cyclist puts their arm out and can touch your car, that's too close. Most lanes for cars are wide enough that you can stay in your lane, scooch over a little bit, and make sure the cyclist has a clear path next to you in the bike lane. It's a bit of an open question. No cases, no tickets have been written, as far as I know, on this 3 foot law yet, and how it's going to be interpreted with regard to bike lanes is still kind of open. But it's a dance that is done, daily, and we're just going to have to see how it plays out. But I think as long as you're far enough from that rider so that that person can't touch your car when they put their arm out, then you should be in good shape.
And I think that points to, we don't have fantastic federal guidelines yet talking about bikes, what bike infrastructure needs to look like on the roads. That is coming. There have been plenty of federal experiments happening in the last several years, but engineers are in a position where they're trying to sort out how to create peaceful roads for all road users. A good example, in the city of Columbus, if you see green paint on the road, that means only cyclists, only people on bikes in this space. In some communities, green paint means this is the mixing zone. This is where cars cross to change lanes and bikes cross to change lanes. And that creates a lot of confusion. We don't have clear guidelines on how wide bike lanes should be at a federal level. And so engineers are doing the best they can with the regulations that exist or the lack of regulations that exist. But I think we're going to see much clearer federal guidelines in the next 5 years that will help answer a lot of these questions and these questions for law enforcement also.
All right, Joan in Delaware, thank you for that call. Let's turn now to David and Galena with some larger perspective. Hi, David, you're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I live in Galena, and so it's a very favorite area for a lot of bike clubs to come through town.
Mm-hmm.
And I have witnessed pretty aggressive behavior in terms of automobiles. In fact, when I was on a bike once, I was hit by an automobile. So I know that perspective. But what I've also witnessed, especially with groups of bikers, like bike clubs perhaps, that a lot of times they'll be riding two or three abreast, and not, they're kind of like hogging the road. And I just wondered if that was something that the bike clubs were encouraging, or it just seems like an odd behavior that it would be better if they were like single file and staying to the right, you know, and that's basically my comment.
Yeah. Okay. Under Ohio Revised Code, bicycles, buggies, horse and buggies, cars, trucks, farm tractors moving from one field to another, all of those vehicles are legal vehicles allowed to be on the road. Roads are public goods. We're all allowed to use that space. Ohio Revised Code allows people on bikes to travel two abreast, not three abreast, not more than that. But sometimes what is safest, not just what's safest for the cyclist, but what's safest for the motorist, is for the cyclist to travel in a position where they're taking the whole lane. It's just not safe to share that lane. And in particular, when you have a club, when you've got a large group of people traveling together, if they travel two abreast, they're more compact. They're easier to move around, other road users to move around, if you've got a single lane in each direction. And so I just want to say there is sometimes this perception that people on bikes are hogging the lanes. First of all, it's just not true under the law. And regardless of the law, it's not true at an emotional level. In the same way that most motorists are not trying to hit cyclists, most cyclists are not trying to be in the way of motorists. They're just trying to move in public space in a way that works best for everyone.
And if you think about 10 riders in a single line and how long it takes to pass them versus a 2x5 tightly packed
group. Just
getting
it out of the way.
Yeah, you can get around that 2x5 group much faster and much safer than riding next to, you know, kind of moving over to pass 10 individual riders.
Is there anything to learn from cities in Europe where bicycle riding is much more popular? Or do they? I think in Amsterdam, they actually have whole roads just devoted to bicycles. So it doesn't really, it's not apples and apples.
No.
but also there are ways to design roads so that they work for everyone using them, whether it's a bus and a car and a truck and a bicyclist. And a lot of that has to do with speed limit and lane width. When you can design roads so that road users are all integrated and everyone can see each other, what we see in some nations where that's the road design is that people do coexist pretty well together.
There's also on the legal side in many areas in Europe, there is a presumption of sorts where the motorist who hits the bicyclist is in the wrong, and they have to overcome that burden. So it's a easier for them to be found liable for hitting someone.
Is it sort of a shotgun versus a slingshot kind of a thing where you obviously have the bigger weapon?
Well, absolutely. And you have a duty of care to avoid, you know, running your 2-ton bowling ball over a 100-pound, 200-pound person.
Okay. Hope that helped. Mike in Columbus, I'm interested in your question. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hello.
It's morning. Hey, it's still morning, by the way, but go ahead.
Well, it all depends what time you get up, I guess.
Good point.
Just wanted to clarify the camera that you were speaking about. You know, I have a camera on my bicycle because of an incident where I was struck from behind and by a vehicle. And so now I use a camera every day. And I was actually on a ride yesterday and had a vehicle pass very close at a very high rate of speed that I'm certain, a reasonably high rate of speed, I'm certain the camera captured the video of how close he passed. Is that something I can take to law enforcement?
Absolutely, yeah. Especially if it was just a close pass, that's one thing. If there is a series of facts leading up to that where somebody's riding behind you, they're honking the horn, they're yelling at you, and then they do that, it becomes something that was maybe careless, turns into something that is an aggressive action. And there have been prosecutions of menacing and things along those lines based on testimony and on video coverage of those situations.
I had an incident in the Short North. I was riding through and there's all that construction there and had a motorist get angry at me and was honking at me. And a police officer showed up, pulled the motorists over, and actually dealt with the motorists for their aggressive behavior. And so I think increasingly we're seeing law enforcement understanding that aggressive behavior is just not tolerable.
It's not good for anybody.
Right.
I mean, it stresses out the bicyclists, and you can cause accidents by doing that. Mike, thanks a lot. Great question. Now, I have a couple of dueling calls. One says that it's better, it's safer in Columbus for bikers than ever before. Another says they don't ride on the roads anymore. So let's start with Kelly in Columbus, who says, yeah, it's safe here. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, how are you, Ann?
Good, thanks.
I'm so glad to hear your story. I was actually getting ready to get on my bike, and I heard you were coming on with the show, and so I'm kind of hanging out and listening to it.
Cool.
But, I told the screener about when I first moved here from Chicago, where cars don't go above 15 miles an hour, how terrified I was when I first moved here to ride a bike. And I lived in Worthington. I lived up on Lizelle and 23, and I used to ride my bike to work every day. And I would take Lizelle to Sankus and do all that. And the hardest part of my ride was always Lizelle Road, just because there's so many potholes and so much traffic and such a small place. And it wasn't possible for people to give me a lot of space. But then my boyfriend at the time bought me one of those construction jackets, the really loud yellow ones. And all of a sudden, people were just avoiding me like the plague. And I'm like, wow, I don't understand what's happening. And then one day I was riding downtown and I saw a police officer directing traffic and he had the same coat on. I was like, oh my gosh, I think I'm a cop. This is awesome. So I love it. And then I've since moved and I feel much safer riding to work every day. And I actually live in, I guess you would call it the hood. But even though it's off Weber Road, I get so much more space. And it's just so much more relaxing and so much.
You know, it's interesting because what Kelly's telling me is that when you tell people you're there and make it really, really clear that they really want to do the right thing.
They do.
And part of it's that. So,
I mean, we're all drivers. You know, you're not trying to be a jerk out there.
And that's part of the theory behind teaching people to ride into the lane, because you're putting those visual cues out there way earlier in the game. If you're far too far to the right, you become kind of blended in with all the other stuff. Once you move into the lane, people see you earlier, they can take action earlier, and it just works out better for everybody.
Kelly, thanks for that call. Mark in Clintonville, you're on the air. You gave up riding bikes in the street because of other drivers.
Exactly. I used to ride North Broadway to work at Riverside, and quite honestly, it doesn't matter how many reflectors I had on or flashes I had. If people do not pay attention, they're driving, they're on their cell phones, they're not paying attention. And quite honestly, if you're smaller than they are, they don't pay any attention to you. And I've just stopped riding entirely. I just do not feel safe.
Yeah, and that those lanes are very wide. And one of the things we know about road design is wide lanes that are straight encourage speeding. It would be fantastic to see those lanes tightened up. When I'm riding on a lane that's wide like that, particularly North Broadway, where you've got a couple lanes each direction, I absolutely put myself in the center of the lane. It's easy for a motorist to move around me. I am visible, and things just move calmer. But one thing we're seeing a lot more with transportation professionals is understanding the role that lane width plays in encouraging speeding, even among people who don't want to speed, who don't want to break the law. Wide lanes are really tough. I have to say, too, Yay Bikes has been traveling the state and certainly all around Central Ohio and riding with transportation professionals, with law enforcement, with elected officials, with anyone who has the ability to improve the experience that cyclists have while they're moving from one place to another on public roads. And we have found, we just rode with the city engineer in Worthington and some folks up in Worthington, how appreciative they are. When we ride roads in their community with them and they see how the road is functioning from the seat of a bike, they understand things they didn't understand before. In Worthington, we had somebody who was in charge of, you know, placing manhole covers and sewer grates and those sorts of things. And when the road is cut into to make some sort of repairs, and he understood, oh my goodness, it matters where we cut because it matters where we patch because that's what's going to create lateral cracks in the road. And once people understand how their roads function, we are just seeing much better road design, much better enforcement. And even economic development professionals who understand bikes mean money in communities are very interested in these rides and how do we accommodate the increasing number of people who are using bikes for transportation to bring wealth to our communities.
We had one of the main arteries going into downtown Cincinnati, Riverside Drive. It had two lanes of traffic. And it was like driving in a Mario Kart
game. Yes, I know.
You know, and where everybody's jockeying and trying to pass. And that was one of the most popular bicycle paths, lanes for incoming and outgoing bike commuters. And they ended up redoing the entire design by making it one lane, one bike lane, one parking lane, and slowing the speed limits down for a traffic calming influence, and it's made the area much safer for the residents because people aren't going 50 miles an hour through there anymore. It's safer for the cyclists. There's not two lanes, but the traffic still moves. It flows. It comes in and out, and it's a much calmer setting.
So Mark in Clintonville might want to try to get back out there as he sees things changing and check it out.
Well, certainly we've seen on 4th and Summit and 3rd in the city of Columbus. Before the redesign of those roads, we had some travel lanes that were 14 feet wide, and people were traveling at a much higher rate of speed than was posted and than they wanted to. I used to live in that corridor, and I would find myself speeding, even though I didn't want to. Mm-hmm. With the redesign of those roads, with the tighter lanes, we not only see increased courtesy between cyclists and motorists, we see an increased level of courtesy between motorists and motorists. It's just clearer what everyone is supposed to do, and people just are behaving better.
We are going to continue our conversation about safety on the roadways between bikes and motor vehicles when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Forget to mention the bicycle is a good invention. Sitting there in a silent movie beside the only girl who really ever knew me. Happy days but sad facing. Heaven knows I'm on the case.
Okay, they moved off the subject of bikes, so we're going to move it back onto bikes. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher, talking about biking safety, bicycling safety on the roadways, what you can do as a bicyclist and as a motorist. My guest, Catherine Gervas, Executive Director for Yay Bikes, and also Steve Magus, a Cincinnati-based attorney specializing in bicycle law. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, something that the last caller brought up about people being distracted drivers now, and I saw in one of your blogs, Steve, the statistics showed that 2015 was the worst year for cycling deaths in the past 22 years, even though it's been trending downward year after year after year. And I wondered if distracted driving had anything to do with that, or if we could even speculate in that way.
You know, I find it hard to speculate year to year. When I look at the numbers historically, from the 70s to the 80s, 90s, each decade the numbers drop. And now right now we're in kind of a holding pattern, it seems like, nationally. Ohio is usually in the 15 or 16 fatals and around 1,500 bike car crashes. I don't know if that seems like a lot or not.
Are fatals always bike car crashes?
No. Okay. I mean, there's of the 1,500 crashes. I mean, these are the things that are reported by the government where a crash report is written. So these don't include crashes that happen on the sidewalk between two bikes or in a bike trail somewhere. These are car-related things.
Okay.
And so of those, and those are the numbers we have to look at, and there's around 1,500 incidents between cars and bikes, and usually 15 or 16 fatal. So, you know, it's a very small percent, 1%, 2%, and that tracks pretty well nationally as well. When you compare Ohio to other states, we're very safe. For one of the top 10 largest population states in the country, we have a very low number of crashes and a very low rate of fatal crashes, things like that. You go to Florida and it's six times higher.
But aren't there a lot more people riding bikes in Florida, or is it adjusted
for
that?
Well, that's part of the problem is we don't know. We don't know numbers. And we were talking about this, Catherine and I, before the show, that it's tough to talk about risk when we don't know the denominator of how many riders there are, how many miles they go. We can do that for cars. We know from gas sales and other data, you know, how many miles we can get a good mathematical estimate of that. We just don't have that for bikes.
What we do know, though, is from the beginning of the time cars were invented, there's this thing called vehicle miles travel, and we can track that. And it has had a pretty consistent slope on a graph when you track that from year to year until with periodic dips for a war or an oil embargo or things, but it goes right back up to the slope until 2002. And in 2002, we saw a dip that has not returned. And we've got numbers through 2015. We are still not on that slope that we were on for decades before that. One of the things we know is there are more people choosing to ride, whether that's for recreation or fitness or increasingly for transportation. My kids are in their 20s. I have a 26-year-old and a 29-year-old. Neither one of them has ever owned a car. They are not unusual among people in their age group. And it's not because their mom runs a bicycle advocacy group.
Most kids do exactly the opposite.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, one of them primarily uses a bus for transportation. The other primarily uses a bike, reluctantly, even though I am a bike lady. But increasingly, younger people are choosing different ways to travel than single occupancy vehicle. And so we are going to see numbers increase just because there are more people on the road. But it would be fantastic if we were measuring that in the same way we measure cars.
Before we went on the air, Steve, you were showing us some information about how bicyclists were part of a larger coalition. First, before we get into that, I want to put Kevin from Pataskala on the air to have him tell you what he thinks about all of this. Sorry about that. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air.
Hey, everybody. Last night on Book TV, I don't know if you guys caught it, the guy wrote a book about how to kill a city through gentrification. And I used to live there right there off of Nelson and Broad and around that area and had friends that lived off Summit and Fourth back in the day. It was the hood. Mm-hmm. Now it's heavily gentrified, and that is very confusing, that new bike stripping they put on Summit and stuff. You don't know whether to cross over or if you're allowed to or not, because you have to cross there to turn at Fifth.
Okay.
But anyway, they touched on this a little bit on the show last night. You can pull it up. It's still online. When gentrification comes and the people that come with that have the ability and means to gentrify, and these types of recreation and plus utilitarian means of travel come into play, and it's almost like a cherry on top when they put the bike lanes in to some of the people that had to leave the area or that are still stuck there. I don't think we really realize who gets to benefit from this. There's a YouTube video on a UPS worker that had to ride his bike back and forth to work in the rain, sleet, and snow. Had to. And they all chipped in and brought him a car because he was almost killed a couple times.
Well, that's different. But you're saying that roads aren't for bikes, right?
Well, I think there was a thing on PBS Steve, the travel guy, had a thing on it. I used to ride, but like the gentleman called, it's really dangerous.
Okay.
And because people now are distracted with the radio MP3s
all
that. But the tone that I'm hearing, the bourgeois tone, come on, guys, really think this critically a little bit deeper. Thanks.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that's good. And I'll tell you, the safety numbers, there is a perception and then there's reality. The perception is, oh, my God, cycling is so safety. You're unsafe. You're tangling with cars. You must have crashes all the time. People must be getting killed left and right. And the reality is that that's not the case. This is a very safe state in which to ride. We know we have millions of riders riding tens, hundreds, thousands of millions of miles each year. And there's a few people that end up in crashes, and unfortunately, 15 or so are killed. There's 300,000 people in Ohio that hit other cars with their cars each year. So we are at the comparison wise, we're just a very, very small sliver of that.
Let's talk about what roads were built for and who's, you know, what the history of that is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Steve?
Yeah, back in the late 1800s, back in the 90s, as I like to say, the late 1890s, when bicycling was coming into vogue, you know, horses were the main mode of transportation, and wagons and buggies and all of that, and the roads were not paved, obviously. When bicycling, the first bike boom was in the 1890s when there were millions of people riding bikes. And the bicyclist merged with some of the commercial interests that wanted to move goods faster. And this good roads movement came into being in the late 1800s into the early 1900s. And the effect of that was to back political candidates who would get roads built and get roads paved. So from the cycling perspective, so cyclists could ride. And the cyclists were also very active in the legal changes, getting bicycles recognized as having a legitimate right to use the road. So this whole idea of where did these roads come from? They came from cyclists primarily and other interests getting them paved.
Which existed before motorists.
That's right.
But I do want to touch back on the issue that the caller was talking about, the issue of gentrification. And income inequality is real. And I should say that when I started using a bike for transportation, it was out of necessity. Uh-huh. My choice was either to pay for insurance on my car and get my car fixed or put my kid through college. And I gave up my car and for 10 years rode because I had to ride. That's how I got from one place to another. And there are plenty of people in our community that the only way they can get to work or school or the doctor or places they need to get to is to take the bus, which if I have a second or third shift job, that gets me one direction, but not both directions, to walk. And sometimes the distances are too great to walk, but you can ride 4 miles in 20 minutes without breaking a sweat. And to create a 4 mile radius around someone's home where they can use a bike for transportation safely in a way where there's not chaos on the roads, where their endocrine system isn't being beat up because they're getting honked at every 3 minutes. That really is a social justice issue for me. Gentrification is real, and it's much bigger than cycling. That has to do with a lot of other things, but creating safe passages for cyclists is very much a social justice issue for many of us.
Email from Carl asks, who has right-of-way, pedestrian or bike rider? Steve?
Well, it depends. The right-of-way is a dance, and whoever is in the lead generally has the right-of-way.
So who's ever coming up? So if I'm walking down a bike path, the biker coming up behind me has the responsibility to go around me.
Right, and a bike path is different
safely
than a road. Yes, that's
okay.
Exactly right. But it's in general, that's true. Unfortunately, the pedestrian laws in Ohio are not so great. And so when it comes to pedestrians and cars especially, it's easy for the car driver to argue that the pedestrian stepped out in front of him. Even in crosswalks, there's issues. So it's not as simple as we'd like to think in terms of the pedestrian has a right-of-way and can have a right-of-way just as a cyclist can, just as a semi-driver can. So you have to analyze each situation separately.
Zach in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Zach.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good.
This is Zach with Traxler Printing. We actually support Yay Bikes, and we're a local printing company in Clintonville that has always looked to put in bike racks for our employees and our patrons to mm-hmm. visit our business on Silver Drive. And I'm curious if there's any incentive from the city or any assistance from the city or nonprofit organizations to purchase these bike racks and install them properly, or if there's someone that helps do that, because we've got you know, 20 employees, and I would say in the summertime, more than half of them ride their bikes because we all live in the central Clintonville area.
Well, the city of Columbus actually does a fantastic job. It's not well publicized enough if you guys at Traxler don't know it, because I know you guys are bikey people. They will provide free bike racks for you. The city of Columbus is very interested in making sure cyclists are accommodated at businesses, whether it's the employees or the folks who are coming there to shop. So you can do make a 311 request to the city of Columbus. It can take as long as 3 months, but they'll install them. They will provide the rack itself for businesses who need something quicker than that. Yay Bikes is happy to work with you, working with a vendor in the United States to help get bike racks into your business if you want something more custom or clever than that inverted U. But the city of Columbus is happy to get bike racks out to support your business.
All right, Zach, good question. Email from Tom says, I'm an avid cyclist, but as I'm listening to the program, I watched a man ride a bike eastbound in the westbound right lane of Broad Street, then cross the intersection against the light, and then right onto the sidewalk near pedestrians. My question is whether there will be proper cycling rules posted on signage on any roads, or whether there is a way to educate the public on proper and safe cycling etiquette. Now, what Tom observed is exactly what you're saying. It's unpredictable bicycling behavior.
Exactly.
And illegal if you're going.
And illegal.
If you're,
right.
Older people, especially, were taught to ride against traffic, and that is illegal and extremely unsafe.
Right.
And at Yay Bikes, we work really hard to educate folks to ride legally, lawfully on the road. We actually have a class that is offered the final Friday of every month where we take people through all sorts of riding conditions and teach them how to ride lawfully in places where they think they might not be able to ride. And they find out they can ride safely. We also do a monthly recreational ride, and all of this information is available on our website. But we're very interested in riding with people and helping them learn how to ride in a way that is lawful, where they can be predictable, and where roads are peaceful.
Dave in Grandview, you're on the air. Hi, Dave.
Yes, hi.
Hello.
A couple of comments. I've been riding bikes for 65 years and still do, but I am finding the roads seem to me to be ever less safe, so I do more bike path riding. And I find a lot of people my age feel that way about it as well. I'm a retired engineer, and I know a little bit about how funds get allocated, and I feel that communities, it's perfectly good to encourage people to bike ride, but they also need to be devoting more of their transportation dollars to bike facilities.
Absolutely.
And bike systems. In particular, I can't see any way that you can have safe bicycling on a 45-mile-an-hour road without having physical separation. And when I look at European bike standards, the kinds of conflicts between numbers of cars, speeds, and bicycles, we just aren't even close to having their safety standards, even in what we're building now.
Because it's a cultural thing more than anything. Dave, we're running out of time. I hate to cut you off, but I appreciate your call. Catherine Gervis.
Well,
take time.
And I think you're right, and that is why we find it's an important part of our mission as an organization to ride with the people who are making decisions about how roads are designed, to ride with planners who are deciding how communities are designed, to ride with elected officials who are deciding how money is allocated for the transportation budget, and to ride with law enforcement so they really understand what the law is. We are very interested in riding with decision makers so that they understand how it benefits their community to create safe places for both people on bikes and people in cars.
We will have a link to Yay Bikes on our website at WOSU.org/allsides, so you can learn about all the different educational opportunities they have. Catherine Gervis, Executive Director for Yay Bikes, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Ann.
And Steve Magus will have a link to his blog. Always interesting. Didn't get to a lot of stuff I wanted to. The hour always flies by. Steve Magus is a Cincinnati-based attorney specializing in bicycle law. Always so helpful to have you on the show. Thank you.
Always happy to be here. Thanks, Ann.
And thanks to everybody for your great calls, for your emails, and thanks especially for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.